The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Kilmeade and Friends.
All right, it's my privilege to bring in Lieutenant General Michael Flynn. His new book is coming out now. It's official. It's How to Win the Global War Against Radical Islam and Its Allies. Hey, General, you mind speeding up this book? We kind of need the answers.
Yeah, well, I've been talking a little bit about it. Brian, thanks for having me on. It actually will hit the streets, probably not until early summer time frame, but I'll send you something to link off of your website if you don't mind, and people can take a look at the early summaries of it.
Yeah, I hope to have you in New York. I saw you with Megan the other day, and you know, anytime you're in here, just walk right into the studio. Even if I'll blow the break, we'll just tell the commercial advertisers, forget it, Michael Flynn's here. And we'll talk about it, because I always love having you on, because we need answers. We don't need people pontificating. I don't care about the election when it comes to this stuff. And I think you have done a great job hiding your feelings and emotions and keeping it to the issues. But first off, I know it's tough, because you're an emotional guy.
It is tough. I mean, I'm very passionate about this, because I face these guys, Brian, and I know how they think. They've told me. And it's an enemy that I don't think enough people in our country see it for what it is. And I think part of that is because our leadership has really denied the fact of who this is that we're facing, and they've really I think they failed to tell the truth.
Which is unbelievable, considering even for selfish reasons. Do you want to be the president that allows a terror organization to amass this type of wealth and power and influence? So far, I think the answers with this administration for 7 years is yes. Whatever you want to say about Jimmy Carter, he was working 21 hours a day after he made the series of terrible decisions from Afghanistan to Iran. You didn't doubt his commitment. His agenda matched the challenges. His answers might not have worked out. Whatever you want to say about Ronald Reagan and George Bush, they tried to rise to the challenge and let historians judge them the way they will. I doubt that this president is admitting to the challenge.
Well, I think that part of it is, and as a leader, and I'm speaking of myself right now, Brian, as a leader of a large organization, my responsibility, and that, knowing that I was only going to be there for a set period of time, my responsibility was not just to, worry about what I was going to do on my watch. I needed to set the organization up to be a better organization over the long haul. And I just don't feel that the leadership right now is looking at the long haul for our country's national security, and they're going to leave a mess for the next president, whoever that president is. I mean, you can't deny that with what's going on, certainly in the Middle East, and then if you just look at the rest of the global map of the world and some of the challenges we're facing with China, in the Asia Pacific region, the North Korea madness, this whole thing with immigration in Europe. Oh my God, what we've seen in Germany in the last couple of days, nobody's paying attention to what's happened in the UK. You've got other Scandinavian countries that are having much bigger problems with some of these refugees that have come in. And it's just not as public in this country as it should be. And that's part of telling ourselves the truth about this. And frankly, that truth has got to come from the top of our government.
And, right now, one of the top stories that we have is two Iraqis arrested, one in Sacramento, one in Houston, 23 and 24 years old. So the case looks airtight. Just two Iraqi refugees who we brought into this country. And we just hear Mike Morrell saying he's very proud of the screening process. But that's what people are worried about. We had documents on these guys, and these two are wrong. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I'm not proud of the screening process. I have some very good friends in ICE and in our immigrations element. I have good friends in CBP. They're enormously frustrated with some of the limitations and some of the restrictions that they're under. The leadership will tell you, they'll tell you all the good things that they're doing, and they're doing a lot of great things. We have great warriors down here at those organizations, but the authorities, the tools that they have. So we don't have the right capabilities. And I do believe that, I'm not choosing one sort of candidate over another, but I think that what resonated with the American public with Donald Trump's comments about, hey, let's take a deep breath and let's step back, and look at what it is that we have to understand in order to actually do to figure out this problem. Because this is not about, you know, Mexican citizens coming into the United States to do agricultural, you know, work down in the southern parts of the states. This is about people coming into our country with an entirely different ideology than we have. And do we want that kind of an ideology to be, frankly, you know, is it imposed? Does it make us better? Is it based on the development of this country and how this country was developed? So, again, this is about the long haul of the United States of America going forward. And the current leadership, I don't believe, has grown in office like I would love to have seen him do to be able to posture this country for the next president and the next president and the next president after that in a way that I would have much rather seen as an American citizen.
Well, we have a couple of things. And number one, I just don't understand why people who are in the inner sanctum that have to know don't realize the danger that we face. I would, with the arrest of these two, and then people are concerned about the southern border.
Yeah.
And when you bring that up, it sounds like you're xenophobic, and that's what the arrangement is. But we have a couple of things to talk about. I just had Congressman Zinke on, 23-year Navy SEAL, now in the U.S. House, and he's talking to the Secretary of Defense. He's demanding answers. He wants to know why our special ops were being pinned down in Marja. He believes the rules of engagement, especially since that hospital bombing, have changed,
right,
putting our guys at risk. What do you hear?
Yeah, I think there's a real sense of risk aversity because of because of incidents like that, Brian, and so our warriors feel and that's up the chain. And of course, the higher up the chain you go, the more risk averse there is because there's a sense that they're going to get into trouble if they do things that they know in other circumstances they otherwise would. I mean, if we have guys pinned down, you know, that's an easy answer. You know, you bring in as much air power as you can, and you pick and choose your targets based on what they're telling you. And trust me, our special operators know what danger close is when it comes to dropping bombs on a target. They should not, if they're in close contact, that's the most difficult combat situation to be in. And our guys know exactly how to bring that kind of ordinance in. So I think Congressman Zinke is correct to challenge the Secretary of Defense to make sure that he understands, hey, you know, we still have guys in harm's way in combat. I don't care what you want to call it. This is war, you know, at its most difficult. And we have got to give them the tools. And they have got to believe, more importantly, Brian, Our warriors have to believe that every single thing that is possible that we can do for them when they're in that situation is being done. And there's nobody wringing their hands, you know, two or three levels above them, worrying about whether they're going to get into
it. Director of the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, he is Lieutenant General Michael Flynn. General, let me ask you, is that why you're not in the job right now, is because you gave your point of view and were so blunt in doing it?
Yeah, I'm a square peg in the round hole, and I always wonder why I even got into the level of leadership that I got into, to be honest with you. But I think I got to where I was at, Brian, because in the places where I was at, I was able to help those commanders that I work for, or bosses that I work for, to be successful, and we were successful in a couple places. And also, I brought change to organizations in a positive way. Sometimes it's a bit disruptive. Now, I was at a level where I was now, you know, both operational and strategic, and getting between intelligence and policy, and frankly, policy that I did not agree with. If somebody was going to make a bad decision, I let it be known. And if they were still going to make the bad decision, I frankly don't want to be associated with people that are going to make bad decisions. So, you know, I had arguments, and I'm a soldier at the end of the day, Brian, and I salute. And I said, okay, I got it. I'm moving out because I just don't. I had a conflict with the decisions that were being made based on the information that was available.
General, I got to ask you, I have heard and I've read that we have not picked up the pace since Paris against ISIS. We just now are watching as the French are bombing oil fields. What do you hear about this huge coalition and the fight against ISIS?
Yeah. Now, and it's open, McGurk, who's the new sort of war czar, I guess, against ISIS, or the ISIS czar, said in a comment the other day, we now are looking at roughly 30,000 foreign fighters in Syria from 100 countries around the world. Now, that's a coalition, Brian. Our coalition, I know that there's frustrations in it because some of these countries, and I'll use France. France is one, and I know these guys very well. They are frustrated that we're not giving them the intelligence that they need to be able to go drop some bombs on some targets that they're willing to drop more bombs on in Syria than we might be. So we need to be really rethinking how we are going to conduct this this effort against ISIS. And like I've said in other venues, Brian, and you've been good about it with me, is this is not just about the military arm of doing this, but there's going to have to be some capturing and killing in order to get the security we need. And then to really get to the stability, there's got to be some real hard love diplomacy. And the hard love diplomacy is not about going in and singing Kumbaya in Brussels or in New York at the UN. This is about tough love and talking to the Russians in a different way, talking to the Iranians in a much different way. I mean, the Iranians are causing so much incredible level of conflict in the region, four proxy wars. I would tell you that Iraq is essentially, much as they won't admit it, leadership level, they are almost a surrogate of Iran, and it's growing even worse. And so these are the kind of things that we have to understand going forward, and that requires tough love, tough diplomatic love, and not, a big speech.
Exactly. Here's General Jack Keane, who expressed his frustration, too. Cut 27.
Neither one of these countries want conflict, that's for sure. But the reality is that there always are unintended consequences that could occur that make this a very dangerous situation. What this is fundamentally about is a geopolitical struggle in the region. Those who characterize it as Sunni versus Shia, that's a superficial understanding of what's taking place. This is Iran seeking regional domination. They have control and influence over four countries already, and that's Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, and Yemen. And they are seeking to undermine the Sunni Arab countries in the region. And the accelerant for this has been the nuclear arms deal that the United States has been pursuing for 4 years. That has been done at the expense of our Arab allies in the region.
And that, of course, would be traditionally Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Egypt. Do you agree with that?
And others. And there's other Gulf states there, too. You know, Bahrain, UAE. So General Keane is 100% right. And so for your listeners, you know, don't make this about, you know, a religion, Shia, Sunni thing. This is an ideology that we're facing, number one. And the ideology has to be reformed. And that's both Shia and Sunni. And that's, you know, when you talked about my book that's going to come out here, I talk about this. I talk about this ideology. And I give, you know, I think really sound advice and solutions as to how we change this ideology to get it to where it's a more stable than what we're seeing. There's some deep-seated things going on here, and what we have to understand, and this nuclear deal with Iran was just, I think, just absurd. You know, all the things that we've seen, and I would bet you, you know, a dollar that Iran will never sign the deal because they already got what they wanted, which is a lot of international recognition and money. So Iran, this is about domination of the region and about international recognition in a much bigger way. And we're going to see, and when we talk about second and third order effects, we're talking fourth, fifth, sixth order effects, Brian, in our lack of taking the necessary steps to be able to do what it is we need to do in this particular region of the world. Really, for the rest of the world.
Yeah, and lastly, I know this comes out of left field, but you're one of the few that could answer this possibly comprehensively, and that is, why have we not gone through all the Bin Laden documents? What is in them that people are hiding from us or are afraid to see?
Yeah. So briefly, and I'm going to answer that question. what I find funny is the administration now talks about, you know, raids that they've done in Iraq and in Syria, where they talk about capturing all these documents, and it's the largest, you know, amount of documents we've captured, and we're exploiting them. Really? So the guy that got us into this mess, Bin Laden, we had a massive raid go in there to capture him or kill him. He died, obviously. But we, you know, from some of the statements, this is the largest treasure trove in the history of the war so far that we've captured. And all of a sudden we have crickets, meaning everything went quiet. And so why aren't we doing that? Well, because there's things in there that don't, that did not meet the narrative, frankly, of this White House. Bin Laden was in charge. He was communicating. They were learning lessons. They were doing things in the Arab Peninsula to prepare themselves for the next, their sort of next stage of their campaign plan. They learned a lot of lessons from Zarqawi, who was just an absolute psychotic. And he was beaten. So they lost to us. We put them, you know, under General Petraeus and the leadership that he brought in and the campaign plan. We silenced them. We defeated this ideology that thinks that they're, you know, under God's tutelage. We showed that they weren't, that their God wasn't with them, because we beat them. And so some poor decisions pull us out of there. We should be learning a lot more from those Bin Laden documents. And those documents will tell things like they have a campaign plan long term that they see is working.
Gotcha. I can't wait to find out more, and there is no excuse for it. General Michael Flynn, we just scratched the surface, which is why I cannot wait to talk to you again and get your book, Field of Fight. It's How to Win the Global War Against Radical Islam and Its Allies. General, have a great weekend.
Yep, super, Brian. Thank you. Thanks for having me on. Happy New Year.
Same to you.